Now, Edward R. Murrow and the voices of President Harry Truman, General Douglas MacArthur, Congressman Joseph Martin, Senator Joseph McCarthy, Senator Robert Taft, Bernard M. Baruch, Senator Charles Toby, Sterling Hayden, General Matt Ridgway, the men of Walter Reed, and more than 40 other people in the news in the 18th performance of Hear It Now, presented tonight and every week at this time.
I have therefore considered it essential to relieve General MacArthur so that there would be no doubt as to the real purpose and aim of our policy.
I have just left the General. He received word of the President's dismissal from command magnificently.
I was wounded in the right hand. 2 days later, gangrene set in. There wasn't much left to do but amputate it. I've seen fellows that were worse off than I was. I thought I was lucky.
Hear It Now. The Columbia Broadcasting System and 173 affiliated radio stations present a document for air, based on the week's news and the men and women who made it. All the voices and sounds you will hear are real and are presented as they were recorded in the heat and confusion of a world in crisis. Here is the editor of Hear It Now, the distinguished reporter and news analyst, Edward R. Murrow.
The nation was charged with tension this week, that supercharged atmosphere of pressure and conflict which we felt on December 7, 1941, on D-Day, and on April 12, 1945. The sound you hear is the high-speed radio printer transmitter in the communications center at the Pentagon in Washington. 6 years ago yesterday, just after 5 p.m., it sent its swift, highly secret coded voice to our commanders deployed over a world at war. Washington, April 12. President Roosevelt died this afternoon. Vice President Harry Truman taking oath and automatically the new commander-in-chief. It had been 6 years since then, 6 years since a meek, humble former senator from Missouri had asked reporters, "Have you ever had a bull or a load of hay fall on you?" I don't know if newspaper men ever pray, but if you do, please pray for me. And then he went on to say to the Congress,
"It is with a heavy heart that I stand before you, my friends and colleagues, in the Congress of the United States. Only yesterday, we laid to rest the mortal remains of our beloved President, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. The grand strategy of the United Nations war has been determined, due in no small measure to the vision of our departed Commander-in-Chief. We are now carrying out our part of that strategy under the able direction of Admiral Leahy, General Marshall, Admiral King, General Arnold, General Eisenhower, Admiral Nimitz, and General MacArthur."
The peace, which FDR never lived to see, has been a peace in name only for his successor. The Truman administration, like the world it is part of, has existed in a state of perpetual crisis of Cold War, atomic experiments, rearmament, blockades, inflation, and since last June 25, a hot war on the Korean Peninsula. Under normal conditions, the high-speed transmitter in the Pentagon is quiet at midnight. On April 11, just a few minutes before midnight, the switch was thrown. There was another message for another commander in the field. To General of the Army Douglas MacArthur from the President, it said, "I deeply regret that it becomes my duty as President and Commander-in-Chief of the United States Military Forces to replace you as Supreme Commander, Allied Powers, Commander-in-Chief, United Nations Command, Commander-in-Chief Far East, and Commanding General U.S. Army Far East." The White House held the story until 1 a.m. on Wednesday so as to give the general the customary courtesy of receiving his orders first. In the East, most of the radio stations were going off the air, and early newspapers were already on the streets in New York and Chicago. But on the West Coast, Wednesday was still Tuesday. Shortly after 11 o'clock Pacific Coast time, San Francisco, Portland, and Los Angeles had the shocking news.
We interrupt this program to bring you a news bulletin from Washington. The White House has just announced that the President has relieved General of the Army Douglas MacArthur of all his commands in the Far East. The President says he took this action with deep regret because the General is unable to give his wholehearted support to the policies of the United States government and of the United Nations pertaining to his official duties.
1 a.m. is 3 p.m. in Tokyo, 14 hours difference. The General and Mrs. MacArthur were at luncheon, entertaining an executive of Northwest Airlines and Senator Warren Magnuson when the brown manila envelope with the red-lettered flash on it was handed to him. MacArthur read it, put it in his pocket, and continued the meal. His aide, Major General Courtney Whitney, with him at the time, reported it this way.
I have just left the General. He received word of the President's dismissal from command magnificently. His soldierly bearing was never more pronounced. He never turned a hair. I think this has been his finest hour.
The President was asleep by the time the General got the message. Went for his customary walk before 7 the next morning. His first visitor was a former congressman from Texas, Maury Maverick, who recounts the President's attitude on the first morning of what may be his greatest controversy.
When I went into the White House, I noticed that everybody was very serious, and I talked to him, and he knew what I was talking about. And I said, I thank you, Mr. President, because this means that my grandchildren will be free and civil government will continue as the government of the United States. Well, something of a tear came to his eye. He looked very solemn, and he wasn't either cocky or nervous, and he said to me, I thank you, Maury. I do my best, and I must follow the Constitution of the United States. He didn't mention General MacArthur's name.
The conflict between Truman and MacArthur is not a new one. It flared out into the open last August 28th when the General sent a message to the veterans of foreign wars stating that Formosa must be held. The President said this was a political matter and not a military one and asked the General to withdraw. This was done, but not before it had been published. There were other instances of non-agreement, none officially recorded, however. And on October 12, the President flew to Wake Island to meet with MacArthur.
I've just returned from Wake Island, where I had a very satisfactory conference with General Douglas MacArthur. I understand that there's been speculation about why I made this trip. There's really no mystery about it. I went out to Wake Island to see General MacArthur because I did not want to take him far away from Korea, where he is conducting very important operations with great success. I also felt that there was pressing need to make it perfectly clear by my talk with General MacArthur that there was complete unity in the aims and conduct of our foreign policy. So for a first it applied to us that our country was asked to furnish the first commander of United Nations troops. It is fortunate for the world that we have the right man for this purpose, a man who is a very great soldier, General Douglas MacArthur.
Late in November, the Chinese communists struck our forces in North Korea. MacArthur asked for authority to strike back at their bases across the Manchurian border, said refusal of this authority was without precedent in military history. On March 7, MacArthur said that limitations forced on him would cause a stalemate in Korea. General MacArthur.
Vital decisions have yet to be made. Decisions far beyond the scope of the authority vested in me as the military commander. Decisions which are neither solely political nor solely military, but which must provide on the highest international level an answer to the obscurities which now becloud the unsolved problems raised by Red China's undeclared war.
On March 24, General MacArthur, taking off for the Korean front, told reporters he was ready at any time to confer with the Chinese commander-in-chief to settle the war. The President and the Secretary of State immediately issued a statement to other United Nations countries disclaiming any prior knowledge of MacArthur's statement. Some British and other UN delegates began complaining of the General's unilateral action. In Britain, Kenneth Younger, Minister of State, talked about MacArthur but didn't name him.
United Nations aims in Korea have been made clear, and there is nothing in them which the Chinese can regard as harmful to themselves. Neither we nor they should therefore be misled by such irresponsible statements as seem to come out at frequent intervals from highly placed quarters, without the authority of the United Nations, or indeed of any member government.
On March 20, General MacArthur wrote a letter on the Formosa problem to his old friend, Congressman Joseph Martin, the Republican leader in the House. Martin held the letter for 10 days, then released it on April 5. Congressman Martin reads the letter.
Dear Congressman Martin, my views and recommendations have been submitted to Washington in most complete detail. Generally, these views are well known and clearly understood, as they follow the conventional pattern of meeting force with maximum counterforce, as we have never failed to do in the past. Your view with respect to the utilization of the Chinese forces on Formosa is in conflict with neither logic nor this tradition. It seems strangely difficult for some to realize that here in Asia is where the communist conspirators have elected to make their play for global conquest, and that we have joined the issue thus raised on the battlefield, that here we fight Europe's war with arms, while the diplomats there still fight it with words, that if we lose the war to communism in Asia, the fall of Europe is inevitable. Win it, and Europe most probably would avoid war and yet preserve freedom. As you point out, we must win. There is no substitute for victory. With renewed thanks and expressions of most cordial regard, I am faithfully yours, Douglas MacArthur.
On Wednesday, it was history. The radio stations opened with it. The newspapers ran double banner headlines. Not since Pearl Harbor or possibly VJ Day had the news wire services devoted so large a part of their transmission to one story. Buses and subways crowded with people going to work buzzed with the excitement. Western Union was flooded with telegrams. And senators and representatives alerted during the night were on the floor early.
From the infamous sellout at Potsdam to 1 o'clock this morning, the firing of General MacArthur is shocking, almost as shocking as the news of Pearl Harbor.
God help the United States.
The MacArthur-Truman conflict has always been more than a two-man bout, with many managers, handlers, seconds, and instigators on both sides. To Washington, long seething with unrest and violent disagreement on foreign policy, this was a crystallization of all the many differences on the Far East. Truman versus MacArthur, Acheson versus McCarthy, Chiang Kai-shek versus Marshall, Republican versus Democrat, with some exceptions. The Republican high command met early. Minority Leader Joe Martin spoke to the House.
A meeting of the Republican leadership of both the House and Senate was held this morning. We went very carefully into that tragic event. I have also been in contact with Tokyo and have found out General MacArthur would be delighted to accept an invitation to come to Washington and speak before the members of Congress.
In the Senate, there was confusion and heated emotion as members shouted for the floor. Republican Senator Noland of California was one of the first.
By his action, the president has yielded to British and American critics of General MacArthur. Our position in Japan and the whole Far East is placed in jeopardy by an action which most observers will interpret as a preliminary step to a Far Eastern Munich. It is also a great victory for Secretary of State Acheson and his Far Eastern policies.
The Republicans stated that. The word Acheson was heard as often as Truman, Senator Jenner of Indiana.
Why did President Truman strike down General MacArthur in the dead of night? The president has given the Soviet Union the greatest victory it could have imagined. The release of General MacArthur from command in Korea is a political action which constitutes the greatest military disaster in American history. Our struggle in Korea is finished, and there is nothing to do now but bring our boys home.
Senator McCarthy of Wisconsin, a constant foe of the administration's foreign policy, remembered his old enemies, Acheson and Lattimore.
It's a great victory for the communists at home and all over the world. It's the forerunner of completing the sellout in Asia. The old hiss crowd could not complete the sellout of Asia while General MacArthur was in charge in the East. Therefore, General MacArthur had to be destroyed. Now they can proceed unhampered to follow the rules set down by Lattimore when he said, "Let them fall, but don't let it appear that we pushed them." Unless the Democrats in Washington forget politics on this black day and stand up and be counted against this treason, this high treason, if you please, they shall have forever and rightfully labeled their party as the party of betrayal.
Finally, it was the Democrats' turn to stand up and be counted.